Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually...
I Shall Not Be Moved, New Orleans style, thanks to the Dirty Dozen Brass Band. This is from their 2004 album, Funeral for a Friend. It's a really wonderful album. It's odd to say something like that, you think. But it contains much of the music associated with the New Orleans style funeral, from church to the grave. It's really beautiful music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. What have you to say about this crazy week we just have come through? 888-874-4888. If you're joining us for the first time, this is what we do on Friday. It's Free Your Mind Friday. The idea is to have no rules. We have no set subject that we're talking about on a Friday. That is determined by you. You decide what is important to talk about, what is in play at the moment, or maybe something completely different. Want to get a bit esoteric? That's the way to go on Free Your Mind Friday. No rules, except, of course, you know, we're not cussing and carrying on the air. But we relax the rules so that you can present a point of view, an opinion, an idea that is uniquely your own, and you think it is something that you feel the need to share. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to get that ball rolling. We've had a pretty crazy week. As you well know, I don't need to go over it with you. We've been through it several times already. But you choose your subject and try if you can, try hard, to be as concise as possible so we can get as many people on as possible. Lisa from New York, we're starting off with you today. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, how are you, Eutrice?
Okay, thank you. How are you?
Good. I was calling to speak about Joe Biden and
okay.
The fact that I haven't heard the word in the media used too much, the word dementia. I think it's fairly obvious that he must have some signs of, that he does have some signs of dementia. And I think it's very scary. that this is who the Democrats are pushing for their nominee. I agree with you about not always getting involved in electoral politics, but I think it's important for us as African Americans to let people know that we are lucid and that we that we're not going to vote for Joe Biden. And all black people are not voting for Joe Biden. I will not vote for him under any circumstances. And also the fact that he has been on the floor of the Senate many times bragging about the fact that he would take away our Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And I'm going to be very brief, but just to say I am an African American. I'm going to be 66 years old, and these things are very important to me.
Where did you get the hint? Because I talked about it too, about Joe Biden presenting troubling signs that his mental acuity is not what it used to be.
Well, I mean, to me, it's so obvious on the debate stage. And then, of course, and I am also going to volunteer for the Bernie Sanders campaign. And, you know, I see it. I see, you know, some of the videos that have been replayed of Joe Biden. But I find the whole thing very scary, that it will be a contest between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Also, Joe Biden will not win. I mean, if I'm wrong, you know, I'll take the blame for that. But there is no way that Joe Biden has the enthusiasm, you know, that Bernie Sanders has. And also for our humanity and for our children, I actually have a child who's only 19, and this is the world that we need to create for these young people, you know, to deal with climate change, to deal, you know, to have Medicare for all, college for all. My husband is a family physician, and we still have to deplete our bank accounts to pay for my son's college education.
Wow. Thank you for calling in and contributing today. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Thank you, Eutrice. Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Doing good. I'm hanging upside down and I'm feeling great. That blood's in my brain. I'm thinking like a champ today, boy.
You're hanging upside down, but you're feeling good.
Yeah, I'm doing good hanging upside down. You know, like the bats that caused this virus, you know, I'm upside down like them. Now, they don't get the virus, we get it. Anyway.
What's on your mind today?
Before I start about what I want to talk about Biden, I was just wondering if you would consider giving us an extra day to free our minds during the week, maybe like a Tuesday talk back, because 1 hour goes by so fast. And I think the most important thing is that we have our minds free. And if we had 2 days a week, that would give more people a chance to free their minds. That's something I'm just throwing out there for you to consider. Maybe the other callers would agree or not agree with that.
Okay. Under consideration.
Thank you. So now with the Biden thing, remember in the very start, we were a little confused by so many people running for the nomination in the Democratic Party. 17, 18 people were already in there before even Biden got in there. All right. Uh-huh. And so we were wondering. And now it all becomes obvious. Sometimes you got to wait for the dust to settle before you can come up with the determination of things. So now we see that Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren were Biden's adversaries. They pointed out all his bad things that he did in his career. So they were not going to endorse him. The rest of the people, except for Tulsi Gabbard and Andrew Yang, who I both believe decided to run as Democrats to get some notoriety for future references. That's why they were in the race. Notice they didn't endorse anybody, and I'm surprised they haven't endorsed Bernie by now, both Yang and Gabbard. But that will probably come later. But as far as the rest of the clowns that were in there, the O'Rourkes and the Bedichicks and whatever, I can't think of all their names because there were so many of them. In the end here, what has happened? This week is monumental. Four of them dropped out on the same day, and what did they do? Immediately, they're endorsing Biden as the guy who's going to be the next president. And then the next day, Bloomberg, after spending $500 million looking like he was really serious about running for president, couldn't be more pleased than punched to get on there and say, I'm dropping out, but I'm going to endorse the next president of the United States, Joe Biden. What a turnaround. And look at how fixed this whole thing is. Like I said from the start, now we see what these people, why there was so many people in there. Also, Biden didn't have to talk too much. As the last caller pointed out, he can't put two sentences together without making some kind of glaring mistake. He thinks he's running for Senate when he's really running for president. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He needs to be in a nursing home. Why would the Democrats put him...
Oh, you're being so rough.
I'm being rough. I'm telling you, I'm hanging upside down.
I'm rough.
Yeah. This deserves to be rough because they're playing a game with us, and I don't like it. So my job is to enlighten people about this game. So I'm doing the best I can here. Now, if Bernie cooperates and runs as an independent, we are all in store for the greatest comedy ever to be put on TV, the new resurgence of the Three Stooges, Sanders, Trump, and the Biden Hour, or Bernie, Donald, and the Joe Show. It's going to be a riot. I'm really hoping for that outcome.
Well, we'll see. I'm already amused.
Yeah,
thanks a lot for calling in today and contributing. Thank you. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and to the listenership.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
It just become more and more clear, I think, that Joe Biden is, and that he may be suffering from early stages of old timers, dementia.
How are you going to say that? I said I noticed there were some troubling speech patterns that he seemed to have that suggest something, but you're talking as if you examined him yourself.
I didn't examine them myself, but unfortunately, I have been around a number of individuals who have shown those signs and then progressed to dementia and old timers, I'm sorry to say. He's showing it. Look, the bottom line is this. It's not the people who want Joe Biden. It's corporate America and the media that want Joe Biden, I think, because they think that it'll be a better show or a more entertaining show between two mentally incompetent people, the president and Joe Biden. I don't think they feel as though it will be as entertaining with Bernie Sanders. The thing that frustrates me the most is this whole thing with democratic socialism and the fear in which it puts into American people, not understanding that you are going to need certain policies in the years to come that have to be based on the principles of democratic socialism, or the country is just absolutely going to go to hell. There is no real job creation. The economy
yes, there is.
In fact,
there's a new report put out just today saying that unemployment has gone even lower. Now, we can't necessarily accept it whole cloth as the truth, but that's the report today.
Always remember this one thing that nobody ever talks about or articulates, is the millions of people who have just stopped looking for jobs, and that information isn't reported within the unemployment numbers once they are no longer eligible for unemployment. That's the truth of the matter. So if you say to me that unemployment is 3.5%, I'm going to say to you, in all honesty, it's probably around 8 or 9% because of the factors of the millions of people who are no longer reported. Now, let's also think about this.
But let's move fast, because we have a lot of people behind you waiting for their turn to talk.
Oh, okay, could I just say this one thing? This one last thing. Can you please understand that unemployment is based on so-called jobs, but they never talk about people having two and three jobs in order to just be able to maybe survive. So that's something that's not even taken into account, that most people today don't have one job. They have two and three jobs. So I'll just leave it for there and have a good day.
Thank you very much, Jay, for calling in and contributing today. Gary from Miami, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good afternoon, beloved. Hello. Really appreciate love everything you're doing. And I'm going to start off quickly by apologizing, because I meant to call last Friday and I couldn't, because my comments actually relate to a call you had a week ago Monday. And that call had to do with, and I'm just going to share with you how I experienced that conversation. There was a gentleman who had made a comment about different immigrants coming into communities of color to get money, set up shop, get money. And you reacted very quickly to him. And you know, it seemed like we're kind of admonishing him not to think that they were doing anything bad. Everybody had a right to do these things. And, you know, everybody could reach out in different directions to set up commerce as they wanted to. My take from his comments was that he was actually emphasizing that the black community and communities of color have actually a lot of money available and, in fact, attract other people to the community who want to have access to those resources. I didn't think that he was making a disparaging comment. However, I think because the conversation didn't get a chance to be expanded, there were a few points that should have been and could have been addressed to broaden the perspective on the discussion. I think that, right, when people come into the black community, set up businesses, they work hard, you know, they're, you know, providing services that in many cases might not be available. However, the issue that I have a concern with is the playing field is not equal. And what do I mean by that? I mean that business loans, as an example, to allow black people in many instances and people of color to go into other communities to set up shops are not as available as they might be to people from other communities. We can more easily get a car loan or a student loan than we can get a business loan. Secondly, there are barriers of entry into other communities. For example, in New York City, if I wanted to set up a shop of any kind in a Chinese community, a Polish community, another community, I would be barred from getting in because a lot of times language is used as a barrier. Those facilities that would be available to rent or to purchase would only be advertised in the language of those communities, even though the ability to put them in English would be available, so that a wider community of people could have access, the languages that it's advertising would actually serve as a barrier of entry. And then the last point I wanted to make was that my wife was familiar with a black owner of a beauty supply store in Harlem many years ago, probably in the 90s. And it was around the time that, you know, Koreans started coming in numbers into the black community, opening up a hair care, which they have the right to. But the problem was he was strangled. His business was essentially shut down because the Koreans that controlled the source of supply of those products would not sell to him, or in the early stages sold to him at a very high rate, making him non-competitive. So my point is that the playing field is not equal. I yield the floor back to you, and thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Gary, for your call. You made very strong points. However, I will have to say, when has it not been this way? It has been this way for a long time. And there has not been an appropriate response by the affected community for a long time. So, in a sense, that is implicit or tacit permission to continue doing what they do. And if we appreciate the basic truth that people will take advantage of any situation that presents itself, not because they're evil, but because this is what capitalism is, they're not going to come in and have a talk and find out, well, would you be okay if I did this, and would you be okay if I did that? That's not the way it works. We have unreasonable expectations, but we don't have proactive ways of doing things. If you have a community, and it truly is a community, we will know, because nothing can go on that you don't want to go on in there, that you don't want to permit. But in the very communities that you're talking about, there has not really been a coordinated effort at all to speak of. And people then become resentful about the fact that they're seeing people progress, they're seeing people getting, getting ahead, and they're stuck. I've asked a simple question. How many businesses put their money in a black bank? It doesn't happen.
That's a very good point. I mean, we are complicit in our own undoing.
This is what has to be faced, and we cannot make it smooth, and we can't water it down. It's hard talk. We have abrogated our responsibility, even in our own neighborhoods. We let other people run it, and we just happen to live there. But our resources leave our community. Our talent leaves our community, and we don't have a problem with it. We have our schools deteriorating before our very eyes, and there's just, you know, every now and then there'll be a meeting when things get especially bad, but we do not have disciplined communities, organized communities, so we are totally open to people coming in and doing whatever they want to do. We have to understand what a capitalist country is. I talked with a very good friend just last night about this. And it was about a person making a choice. She's not well paid in the position that she's in, but she's actually considering deepening her involvement in a business that has no links whatsoever. It's an Asian person who owns the building, the business. But, you know, she's aiding and abetting and assisting. And I could appreciate the fact that, you know, a paycheck is important too. But we've got to get this thing together. And it's not just about on the sidelines, we observe from the sidelines and we, you know, we speak from the sidelines. We've got to be in it. I've long advocated about putting your money in a black bank. I did stories long ago about a black bank, a small bank in New York City that had the highest rating for community reinvestment. And guess what? Blacks don't put their money in that bank, but feel perfectly entitled to getting a loan from the bank. You're not supporting it. This is the tragedy of it all, that we refuse, we absolutely refuse to take charge of our communities in the ways that we ought to take charge of our communities. Other people see opportunity, they go where the opportunity exists. People may not like it, but then what are you doing? That's the question we should ask. What are you doing to improve your community, to sustain your community, to make it grow and to make it grow healthily? We're not doing that work. I've been with my little one broom brigade. How you change a whole community with a broom. On a Saturday, you get your broom or whatever day you want to, and you sweep the sidewalk. Why? Because you live there. You live there. Your children live there. It's your community. And you should have no hesitancy about making sure that it shines. Just one little broom. And that's how
you make absolutely great sense.
We have to hold ourselves accountable for what we are not doing. We are intentionally injuring ourselves and our future by being uninvolved. We leave ourselves open to invasion and to attack. And so there comes a time when you get fed up and you start talking about it. But the fact is, all the time that it was happening, we were quiet and we've done nothing. Thanks for calling in. Great points that you made today. Thank you. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eucharisse. I'm going to go to a place where I haven't heard anyone go before. All right. You know, people talk about what Bernie Sanders is talking about, Medicare for all. But the details are not mentioned enough. They need to be talked about. And what I'm getting at is this. You have Medicaid and you have Medicare. Medicaid includes many things as well as some dental service. Medicare, unless you get into a special advantage plan, I think they call it, may include some dental care. But generally, as I know it, Medicare does not include dental service, and to me, dental service is important, just like the medical service the MD physicians give, and what the DDS people do, and the DMD people do as dentists, that's important too. So that should be included in any expansion of Medicare. Also, another thing that's not discussed is this, the way physicians and dentists are paid. What you have is a situation in most cases where you have a fee for service. Now, what's the problem with that? In many cases, and people need to think about this, this concept of do no harm, that's nice, that's a nice statement, but that doesn't mean that that practitioner is going to always think about the correct thing that needs to be done or doesn't need to be done for a particular patient. So you have a situation where many times, let's say a physician will do a service or attempt to do a service that is really not necessary because that's how this person gets paid. So we need to think about changing the way that practitioners are paid rather than just having fee for service, because many, many, many people, I believe, are burdened with services that they don't need. I have a lot of personal experience about getting a service that was a bad decision, but that practitioner got paid. So we need to change the way that our practitioners are paid so it's not necessary for him to get the big payday by doing something that is not necessary. And I've had that happen to me. I've been rescued in a couple of cases where, for example, surgeon said, I need certain procedures that were not needed whatsoever. And, you know, another physician showed me a method of treatment that avoided that very serious surgery. So my point is, let's think of something beyond fee for service and ways to pay fairly practitioners of medical service and dental service.
Thank you. Good point. Excellent point. We go next to Chicago, where our friend Henry awaits.
Hey, Priest, how's it going?
Okay. How's it going by you?
Oh, it's going. Just wanted to wish you and the PRN and Lead Story listeners a productive weekend.
Thank you very much.
Just quickly, from your previous caller before, David, just to let you know, and I've seen what you had said about black businesses not putting money in black banks. Well, apparently here in Chicago, about over 10 years ago, we had at least 5 black-owned banks. Now we're down to 1 because of the fact that a lot of the black-owned businesses here in Chicago never really supported the black-owned banks. So just to give you a insight on what happens when, you know, you don't do certain things like that. But I wanted to touch on what I touched on yesterday in regards to the public enemy controversy and Bernie Sanders. Because I think, you know, and this goes far beyond what, you know, beyond this group, Public Enemy. I look at it from a larger standpoint of what hip-hop music has gone through from my era of listening to hip-hop music, which is, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, where, you know, hip-hop music used to have serious political messages. And one of those groups, Public Enemy, was kind of like one of those groups that made it fashionable during that time to have messages. And, you know, me growing up and understanding what these messages in hip-hop music was, you know, they were kind of like, you know, especially in my era, they were kind of like our civil rights leaders, because they educated us on a lot of things that, you know, we weren't being taught in school. So, but then we're seeing, just like, you know, the civil rights leaders that, you know, we see, they're being, you know, they're complying to the system that they talked against, you know, from the standpoint of when they were, you know, when they were in their height. So you look at, you know, for example, Public Enemy. You have, you know, the guy who got kicked out the group, Flavor Flav, who, you know, over the last, you know, couple of years has been on TV acting clownish and acting, you know, all kind of, you know, different sideways. And then you had, like, you know, Chuck D, who's the leader of the group, who basically...
Well, he isn't the leader. He's the co-leader.
Okay, yes, the co-leader. I'm sorry, the co-leader. Because, yes, he basically, in a couple of his songs, but one song that I particularly remember about him talking about that, you know, the line he says that neither party is mine, not the jackass or the elephant, which is a metaphor for the Democratic and Republican Party. So, right. You know, he supports Bernie Sanders. And I don't have any problem with that, you know, but... At the same time, it just kind of, you know, fractured the group where, I mean, the group has already kind of been fractured, but you take a look at what their situation is and how hip-hop music from 25, 30 years ago has evolved into something totally different. But then the people who, you know, innovated it with, you know, now they've become part of the system that they, you know, spoke out against now. So I just kind of thought that was interesting, you know, with that situation that has happened with them.
All right, so now is a good time to just give us a little synopsis of what the issue is that you were referencing and addressing, in your opinion.
Okay, so basically, there was a... Chuck D, who is the co-leader of Public Enemy, is supporting or publicly supporting Bernie Sanders. So what ended up happening was the Sanders campaign did this flyer with Fight the Power, and it had a silhouette of Bernie Sanders on it. Well, the other co-leader of the group, Flavor Flav, did not like that. So he tried to sue Chuck D on a cease and desist to not use the name Public Enemy. So what ended up happening was Chuck D came out with a statement saying that Public Enemy, Flavor Flav, is no longer part of Public Enemy. Now, how legally he can do that, I'm not sure, because like you said, they're kind of like co-leaders of the group. So it's this legal wrangling going on between, you know, Chuck D's support of Bernie Sanders and, you know, using the name or the fashion or the logo of Public Enemy with the Bernie Sanders campaign that has basically kind of, you know, fractured, you know, the group itself. But apparently Chuck D was saying that this has been going on for years. And I kind of see it where, you know, Flavor Flav has kind of gone off the hinges and in regards to his actions and, you know, on TV and everything. So, but like I said, I kind of tie it to indicative of being what the old heads of hip hop, you know, especially in my generation, who talked political, you know, taught us political savvy, now have become part of the system that they spoke out against.
it's a little ironic, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
But, you know, I think the issue is still being missed. You have two former partners, now at loggerheads with each other. And presumably it is over whether to perform or whether to support Bernie Sanders as opposed to some other candidate, and who has the power to do that. What you're seeing here is an undisciplined company behaving badly in public. It's not that deep about, you know, political philosophy and having, you know, differences of opinion over political philosophy. It is about people who have invested so many years in creating a culture and sustaining a culture and becoming icons of the culture, who themselves are unable to discipline themselves and their company and matters relating to the company. First of all, we should know this in public. We, the public, should know that they're having rough times. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to have, especially in that world, there are so many people that they could have turned to mediate and to help them get themselves together and their company together without now having it reach to the point where there must be a break and it's not salvageable. They are indisciplined. And nobody else is responsible for that. They are. And they're going about this whole thing the wrong way.
You're right.
I thought that, you know, at least they had direct channels to Minister Farrakhan and others who could sit down and reason with them and try to find a way out of this morass that they themselves created. It's not that one is more to blame than the other. It is that the dynamic has become so unhealthy. And unfortunately, they are the owners. They are the leaders. And now it's all over the place and it's a mess. People have to handle things differently. It's okay because, you know, if your company has reached a point where there must be a split, okay, go ahead and split. There's nothing extraordinary about it. You have a difference of opinion that is really deep, go ahead and solve it. There's nothing extraordinary about it. This happens all the time in all spheres of the business world. You have gigantic breakups. You have serious acrimony going on internally. But they don't handle it like this.
Fighting for a republic is not a good thing.
I'm sorry?
I said fighting in front of the public is not a good thing.
It's a death wish.
Yep.
Nobody is going to win. The whole company will sink. And, you know, it's a tremendous loss. And also a loss for leadership. You're a younger generation of entrepreneur. We're supposed to expect you to behave differently, act differently, solve your problems differently. And it's not that they're without resources. Like I said, there are many African-American people that they could reach out to if it came to that, to kind of broker some kind of a working relationship. And if it is not possible, so it's not possible. Break up the company, but do it nicely so that you have an afterlife. But this is messy. Messy.
Yes, it is.
You know, the more I think, I don't know if you remember me putting a proposal together of my idea of a Department of Corrections, which will consist of two little old ladies in the South.
Oh, yes, yes. I remember that.
That's what they need. Send them to two old ladies in the South, and the first thing they say is, son, go out back and bring me a switch.
Wow.
Then correction will begin. That's what we need. We need that kind of correction. But yes, it's very unfortunate that it is happening so publicly, and it's so nasty. And there are so many underlying issues there that you can't fix in one fell swoop. So from my perspective, we just have to accept the fact that this long-running association has come to an end. Now the question is how they tie things up and move on.
Yep.
Thanks, Henry, for calling in. Take care. Everlasting from Alabama, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace. How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Okay. Yes.
What's on your mind today? What are you freeing your mind of today?
Okay, well, I was just calling in reference to what Gary was calling. I'm the individual that called a couple of weeks ago, right? And if
yes.
the conversation get too far. But this is what I was trying to say, basically in a nutshell. I was just trying to say that, you know, we are looked at as being poor, but we're not, because we have the money together and ourselves to be able to have all the facilities and everything that we need to finance ourselves. I wasn't saying anything wrong with any other ethnic group coming to our communities, making money, opening business. That's what they're supposed to do, take care of their own and feed their own, which I think that's what we should be doing collectively also. I was just saying that the money is there for us to do this. And like you said, why we don't do it, there's a thousand reasons why we don't do it. Self-hatred, lack of self-esteem, the trauma we've been through for years and years and years, which is no excuse now, because all that we've been through, all we have to do is put some of our resources. We don't even have to be together 100%, just a little bit of the percentage. We can do that. I'm going to give you an example. There was a church in Mississippi who I'm going to show you how power, that we say that we're poor, power is in numbers and putting your resources together and having collective establishments amongst each other. So what happened is they had food, but 200 people were receiving food stamps in this congregation. So what they did, they said they put all the food stamps together. Now, individually, they didn't have that much, but together they put all the food stamps together, went to a wholesale food place, went and opened up a supermarket inside the gym in the church, and in 6 months, they would opened up a supermarket and also had an office building as well. So I'm just saying, that if we pool our resources together, okay, that's power. You know, but now if you don't, and I wasn't saying anything about, you might have just, you know, assumed I was saying something, that's not what I was saying, because these people aren't doing what they're supposed to
do. I understood you very well, and your points were strong and forthright. Right. So I had no problems with the points that you put forward for our consideration.
So what was the problem you had with it then? I'm just curious.
I'm sorry?
I say, well, so what was the situation? Because I never got a chance to finish. You know, did you have a problem with it? And if you did, what was it?
No, not at all.
Okay.
You're expressing an opinion. You happen to have very strong points, I thought.
Right.
And you did a good job of presenting your points and your opinion to support your points. I thought that was well done.
Right. Because because like I said, like even with Ted, and like you said, which you're right, we have these resentment for certain people. I don't have a resentment because I look at myself as the collective. Even if I'm not the cause of something, I look at the collective because, you know, my rent is paid, all my bills are paid, I got food in the refrigerator. Individually, I'm straight, but it's not about me individually. It's about the group, you see. And that's one thing, like you said, we don't do because we don't look out for the group for various reasons. What we've been through, whatever. All I was just saying is that the money, like I was saying with the church, in 6 months, the church had enough money, but doing is going to the wholesaler, putting all the food stamps together, and they opened up a store and an office building. And my thing, what I was saying, a lot of times we say, well, we're poor. How can we be poor if we can keep the stores of people, the other ethnic groups, and I'm going to keep stores open, they have stores open, and the gas stations, if we were poor? So that's what I'm saying. See, we let these people fool us and tell us that we're poor. We can't be as poor as they say we are. We have all this money at our disposal, but it's what we use the resources for. That's the whole thing. It's not that we can't do it, but we're not using the resources for what's necessary. Like I remember a year or two ago, when you talk about strategic resources. See, right now, myself personally, I don't deal with what I want right now. I deal with what I need. See, I deal with what I want, so this way I'm able to save a little money, put a little money here, so this way if we can come together, somebody, you might say, but look here, Everlasting, I got a little business thing here, but if you can invest, I have a little money to invest. Not all of my money, but I try to be in a situation where if something like that happens, and when someday we can come together, you know, without all this fighting and bickering, I got a little something, I can invest, we'll try, so we can come together, we can do something for ourselves. Just like with the political game that's going on right now. Okay, this is me personally. See, even with Bernie Sanders, whatever will come in, Bernie Sanders, everybody cannot wait for Bernie Sanders to come in November with the cape on and with the excellent ship, the goggles, and fly in and save the day. I may be able to wait to September. Other people cannot wait that long. So we have to find something to do right now.
He's going to come in with a cape?
Yeah, you know, Superman coming with the cape, with the S on his chest, with the goggles. Here's Bernie to save the day. That type of nonsense, you know what I'm saying? And then, like what you were saying before, about our community. Like you said, we have to have the blame. We have to put the blame, some of the blame on ourselves as well. But look at the system as a whole. We sat back all these years from like the 80s to now, fight against each other, material things, cell phone, buying all the stuff that we don't need. And we allowed these corporations to get so much money and power. That's why it's so hard to fight against them now. They have so much. When we sat there, like you were saying with us, in our communities, not doing anything we were supposed to do, we collectively as a people, black, white, and indifferent, we allowed these corporations to get so much money. Now they put these politicians up there that, unfortunately, the Adam Clayton Powell, the Shirley Chisholms, they're not around anymore. These people are in the pocket of the corporation. I know what they're saying, all this good stuff, but the reality of it is that they're in the pocket of these corporations. So that means that we're going to have to some way find a way to pull our resources together and create our own, like you said, with the bank. It only costs $250,000 to open up a credit union. We can open up our own bank. We can put money together. We can build our own hospital. We got black certain neurosurgeons. We have black heart surgeons. We got black valvologists. We have all kinds. We can build our own hospitals. Like, you know, in this way, we can not only service ourselves, we can service everybody, you know. But we refuse to do, because then if we don't have a cooperation against each other, I don't care how much money we got. If there's self-hatred there first, how are we going to be able to get anything? If we get something together, the self-hate is going to destroy it anyway. So that's what we have to work on first, being that we can be able to work with each other, trust each other a little bit. Not all, we have to put all your trust and faith in nobody, because that's crazy. But we have to put some type of trust and faith in each other. And my last point, what I want to say before I want to go, like this fool, Donald Trump, I'm going to call him a fool, okay? Now, there's two things about it. Of course, he's the worst thing that ever probably happened to America, on one hand. But now, on the other hand, he might be the best thing that ever happened to black people. You know why? Because now he's showing us that we don't stick together now, after what we've seen with this guy here, I'm sorry to say that. I'm not pessimistic, but there's no hope. But we can't see it by now. So it's on one hand, it's the worst thing that ever happened to us. But then on the other hand, it could be the best thing if we use it as that. And that's all I wanted to say for today, Etrice. Thank you very much for letting me have an opportunity to call.
Well, I thank you very much for expressing yourself, because this is what the program is for. Right. It is for you to present your own views yourself, so that there's no danger in being misunderstood, and you are communicating what you believe to be the most important thing to say at this time. And that's the purpose of the program. And I thank you for taking the spirit of the program. And that is laying out exactly what you're thinking. And people are free to react. But they can't say they didn't hear your point of view. See, that's important. That's very important. And I thank you for calling in and contributing today. Well, you know, we're coming to the end of the program now. And I repeat all the time how proud I am to be in your midst. We're all working at the same thing together. We may have a little differentiation in roles here and there. My job is to guide or help guide the conversation and to help the presenter get closer to the point so that your on-air time is well used. But I also want to remind you that this is a service that you don't readily enjoy on most radio stations. People don't just get on and say what they have to say, which is a roundabout way of saying, consider supporting the station. It doesn't matter whether you put $1,000 or $10 or $5. It's important that you speaking for yourself and you speaking for your commitment to helping a community grow and change. That's important. And you are participating, actively participating, not only in growing a community, but holding it together. Because we won't go anywhere just talking. We have to put something behind what we say. So I want to plant that seed in your head today to consider thinking about supporting the station on a very real level, in the same way, in the same spirit that it supports you. Think about it. And even if you say, well, I could commit to $10 a month, that's a very good goal. And you know what makes it better is when you actually do what you say you want to do, when you make it real. That's very, very important. So it's not as, you know, like Bloomberg could come in with $200 million and say, here you go, here's a check. No, we don't have those kinds of people. But a $10 gift is as good as a $200 million gift. If you mean it, if you mean it, if you committed, really committed to it, your intentions are good, and you make real your intentions. That's what I want you to start considering, because at some point soon, I'm going to do my part to help raise funds for the station, because it's going to be very, very instrumental in keeping communities together and keeping the spirit of communication, true grassroots communication, alive. We will ask you to take a role in funding it. It's not something that is outside of your capability. It's even if you say, well, I could afford $10 a month, if you deliver on that promise, you might as well believe that you are in the same class as people who have $200 million to give. Okay, but I thank you for honoring this program with your sincerity of effort at communicating and communicating respectfully and honoring yourself and others that way. It does a great deal of service, I feel, to me and to the program. So I am delirious with joy on a Friday and every day, actually, because people say exactly what they want to say and they feel free to do so. Thanks. The weekend is coming up. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life and who add that special something, because they exist and you exist and together you're connected. And we'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.